I've been thinking about taglines for 5G and the inevitable 6G and eventually 8G. More G's than you can shake a stick at.
Weak sauce.
Ooh, maybe a G's.
G's.
What's up, 5G? This is the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast for Wednesday, the 5th of October, 2022. I am your host, Ken Ray, joined today by Peter Cohen, editor at RCR Wireless News. Peter, I'm giddy, man. It is so great to have you here.
It's been a long time, Ken.
It's been just under a year, is what I am told by reliable sources. Second part of today's show, we're going to talk about the future of 5G and what comes after. How many G's do we need? First, though, this is actually born of something that we talked about on this show yesterday. I was talking with Jeff Butts, managing editor of the Mac Observer, about a note from J.P. Morgan analyst Samik Chatterjee. He hit with some interesting numbers regarding the iPhone, and if you want to hear all about that, yesterday's show is a great place to go. Or actually, I think I wrote it up on the Mac Observer as well, under the observation deck over at macobserver.com. So mostly what Samik Chatterjee was looking at was the health of the iPhone market. But the thing that caught my eye and what made me want to call Peter, according to his note, part of which was published by Apple 3.0, drivers of upgrade are less specific this year as far as going from any other phone to iPhone 14 or the Pro or the Pro Max or the Plus or whatever. Switchers, he says, are focused on 5G. And that got me thinking about all sorts of questions to which I don't know the answer. That is why Peter is here, because he covers wireless for a living. Let's just start with that number. Well, lack of number, because he said 5G is the thing that's driving most people wanting to upgrade. Do we have any idea what current adoption rates are for 5G in the U.S.?
5G, I don't know offhand what overall adoption rate is, but I can tell you that adoption rate at this stage of the rollout of this generation of technology is actually ahead of where we were with 4G. A lot of it really depends on where you get your numbers from. I think that for 2022, we're looking at about 100 million 5G connections here in North America, between U.S. and Canada.
Okay.
So it's trucking along.
It's weird to me that he would say that that's one of the primary drivers. And I wonder, and it's only just based on what you said 20 seconds ago, so I'm not trying to throw you a curveball, but I remember the emphasis on advertising 4G when 4G was hitting was insane. They had, I want to say Verizon maybe, had a thing where they had like one of those grabby things, you know, from the stuffed animal game at the bowling alley, where they would have an arm come down. It would like pick up a football and drop it into your phone. And it picked up, I want to say, Beyonce and dropped her into your phone. And it was doing all this stuff. And it said like things that was like powered by lightning and all this stuff that made 4G sound like this thing you had to have. And I personally, I mean, to me, it was just, you know, faster than 3G was pretty much all it was. I don't know if 5G has been the same because my television viewing habits have changed. I'm not watching regular commercial television, so I don't know if 5G is being advertised just as heavily. I also don't know if people have a clear idea of what 5G is even supposed to be. I guess I'm curious, are you surprised to hear that 5G is a primary driver?
No, because 5G is a lot more, first of all, than what a lot of people think it is, or for that matter, really how it's been offered for the past couple of years. You know, it's worth, I think, looking at this from a more holistic perspective, and that is that the telecom industry more or less works in 10-year cycles.
Mm-hmm.
So, 4G came online in 2009,
mm-hmm.
and 5G came online in 2019-2020.
Right.
But the first implementation of 5G that most people in the world experience is very different than what 5G is. In many ways, 5G is at least if you talk to people in the telecom industry, and I do all day long, they will tell you that 5G is fundamentally much different than the generations of phone technology that came before it. So, you know, today, if you're like me, I'm a T-Mobile customer. I've, you know, gone through a series of iPhones. I'm still using an iPhone 12. Your first experience with 5G is what's called 5G NSA or 5G non-standalone. It's 5G radios, you know, the towers that you're connecting to over your phone are equipped with 5G antennas, but the data gets backhauled to a 4G core. So you're getting the benefit of enhanced mobile broadband, which is a key differentiator between 4G and 5G, faster speeds.
Right.
But under the hood, everything is still 4G.
And how do I know the difference?
When you get like 5G UC or ultra wideband or what have you, that is more spectrum. And in the case of, let's say, T-Mobile for a second, that's a lot more of their integrated whole thing. But let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
So when 4G came online, the reason why there was so much movement in the industry to get people to use 4G is because the technology was fundamentally different. 3G wasn't scalable for the millions of people that wanted to use mobile devices and that, you know, the telecom companies wanted to use mobile devices. 3G still depended on, you know, having an active circuit connected between your device and the receiving device. It was, you know, dramatically more evolved, but fundamentally, when you were talking, when you were communicating with somebody over 3G, you were using the latest evolution of the same technology that Alexander Graham Bell developed. 4G changed all that. 4G stopped with actual physical circuit switching and turned everything over to data. This made it a lot more scalable for telecom companies to be able to sell people connections. And that's why 4G really harkened the end of metered connectivity for your cell phone. Everybody started getting flat rate plans, right? You might, you know, pay for data, pay for voice, but you weren't getting charged by the call anymore. You weren't only working with a set number of minutes per month. You were getting unlimited text and talk for a flat rate. They could do that because it didn't matter whether you were looking at a web browser on your phone or sending messages or making phone calls. It was all data. It was all sent over, you know, using IP protocol, using the same protocol that makes stuff work on the internet, just wirelessly. And that's also why mobile data began to take off and why so many companies began to offer internet applications and services and other things that you could do with your phones for the very first time in any real meaningful way.
Okay, so if the difference between 3G and 4G is the difference between you are wirelessly doing what we've always done and then 4G takes it all digital, I mean, if there's a way to quickly encapsulate it, what's the difference between 4G and 5G?
5G takes the underlying core technology that makes the network work. And reworks it completely with a service-based architecture that's modeled after the same way that cloud services work. So all of the logic that controls the way that your phone service works is in a 4G network really kind of siloed off in the core, typically on very specialized hardware with very specialized software. 5G changes that into a service-based architecture that uses microservices that work the same way that cloud services work. That's useful if you know how cloud services work. Most civilians don't.
Right.
But the difference here is that it's infinitely scalable, right? As long as I've got the hardware to run whatever software I want, it doesn't matter if that software is running on one server or 1,000 servers. I can ramp it up depending on my demand. I can pull it back down as demand diminishes. I can suit the service to what the actual need is. That's not something that telecom could do before. So, you know, that gets a whole bunch of different technologies into play that make 5G really unique. So 5G, like I said before at the outset, you know, most of our experience is faster towers, faster radios, but the same old 4G core. That's non-standalone. Standalone 5G is where things get really interesting.
All right, hang on one second, because I actually want to go to the future of all of this in just a moment. But let me ask you a question really quickly, because you hit on something that kind of makes me curious. You said 5G does this, provided you have the hardware. Has what we've seen in the supply chain, has what we've seen as far as the, you know, the crunch in chips, has 5G, despite the fact that it's been sold as a service for the past couple of years, are we actually seeing it? Well, not we, because average consumers, I think, like you just said, we think faster, better. It says 5G up on the corner of my screen. I'm good to go. Is your industry or is the industry actually being hampered by the hardware issues we've seen since the onset of the pandemic?
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. It's been a huge issue for everyone.
Okay. Okay. Hold on, because I want to ask you what we could be looking at. And that's going to lead right into our talk of the future, I think. We're going to do the future of wireless in a moment. But first, I do want to let everybody listening know about another show that I do. If you don't know what macOS Ken is, I'm really excited to be able to tell you about it. It's a daily digest of Apple news and news related to Apple news. Could be a good companion to this show if you're looking for a companion to this show. Monday through Friday, it is 10 to 20 minutes of Apple news to amuse, entertain, and inform. I've been doing it. It'll be 17 years in January. So it's been a day or two. I would love it if you would check it out. The show is called macOS Ken. Look for it wherever you get podcasts. Peter Cohen is editor at RCR Wireless News. He is a longtime writer on the Apple front as well. Do me a favor. Tell everybody really quickly what RCR Wireless News is and where they can find it.
We report on the telecom industry. You can find us at rcrwireless.com. And I'm on Twitter at Peter Cohen RCR.
Oh, cool. Wow. You have a grown-up Twitter name.
Now.
I know. I don't know if I'm glad for you or sad for you.
I still do plenty of, you know, posting on my other one. But
Don't tell anybody what that is, because we'll get to that in just a little bit. All right. So when last we left 25 seconds ago, I said, so has 5G been hampered by the hardware crunch that the whole industry has seen over the past couple of years? And you said, of course.
Yeah.
Best of all possible worlds, what should we be looking at today? If COVID doesn't happen, if the chip crunch doesn't happen, if all that doesn't happen, where did the industry expect to be right now with 5G versus where it is?
You know, there are some hallmark features of standalone 5G that the industry really wanted to move towards and enable. One of them is massive machine-type communications, or MMTC, the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm.
5G standalone networks support massive, like orders of magnitude more density per kilometer for devices connected to a single cell tower. You can have like a few thousand connected to a single cell tower all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with 5G standalone, you could have a million. That doesn't make any sense to you until you think about the way that IoT devices get used. You could easily have a million sensors, a million 5G-equipped IoT sensors in a single warehouse, for example, if you're trying to track logistics, if you're trying to track all of, you know, where your packages are or, you know, what your devices are doing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, agriculture, this is another area, industrial applications. So that dramatically improved density per cell is one thing. Another thing is what they call ultra-reliable low-latency communication, or URLLC. And that paves the way to do things like mobile edge or multi-access edge computing. You know, edge computing that happens on the or computing that happens on the edge of the network instead of back at the data center. Mm-hmm. Network slicing is another function that's specific to 5G standalone. So companies right now can have their own custom 5G networks, but it takes a lot to do that. Network slicing enables the carrier to specify service levels and quality of service guarantees for specific customers working on the same public network, if you will, but with their own individual slice of it. Now, that's not important for you and me, but if we were a Fortune 500 company and we wanted to secure private 5G service specifically for our employees that offered this capability, or we needed this for some technical reason, being emergency responders to specific things, this would give us a way to do that. We also hear a lot these days about metaverse. Now, metaverse isn't a 5G play or even a 5.5G play, if you will. But the things that they're talking about that will drive metaverse technology forward are things that we're laying out now with 5G that will evolve continuously. And by the time 6G rolls around in 2030, you're going to see a lot of that stuff happening. It's a continuum of technology that just continuously improves.
See, what's interesting to me is when you talk about metaverse stuff, my assumption is metaverse is going to be more dependent on the broadband that's coming into a fixed point like your house or the cafe or whatever. My assumption is that it's going to take evolution of 5G or maybe even 6G before you have really great AR applications where I can, you know, put in my contacts or put on the glasses and walk around and not worry about whether I have a connection or not. When you talk metaverse, are you talking VR? Or are you talking AR? Or are you talking a combination?
I'm talking about the technology that will drive all of that, right? We need to get latency. Mm-hmm. That is the round trip amount of time it takes for a bit of information from my device, my phone, to the computer on the receiving end in the cloud and then back again. We need to get that an order of magnitude lower in order to make AR, VR work. Mm-hmm. We need much better broadband capabilities to do that. And to your point, no. Fixed anything is a bad – It's an incomplete solution. What we're talking about, or what I'm talking about anyway, is lightweight devices, whether it's a handset or whether it's a pair of glasses that you'll be able to put on that don't have the Oculus stuff that you see now. It's like strapping a toaster to your face. It is not an easy thing to wear. It's not an easy thing to use.
Yeah.
It's awkward. It's clunky. It's kludgy, and it's gross. It's the same kind of crap that Jaron Lanier was showing off to people back in the early 90s, saying, "Hey, this is the future of the cyberpunk world."
Oh my God! You are hurting me so much right now because that is what. You're killing me. I mean, you're right. It was clunky and terrible, but it was also 30 years ago. Cut the guy some slack.
No, exactly. So 30 years later, don't you think that we should be a little bit further along? Well, we are. We're right on the cusp of it. But getting these thin devices depends on being able to offload so much of that computational stuff and put it in the cloud, but get the cloud closer to the user so it actually works. Right? So that's a big deal. I mean, we could talk about metaverse all day, but that's only one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is vehicle-to-vehicle communication. You know, we hear a lot about autonomous vehicles, right?
Yeah.
And, you can buy a Ford or a Chevy right now that'll shift lanes itself, and you can blow thousands of dollars on FSD on your Tesla and get something that doesn't work and will probably kill you. That's not how any of, and by the way, I know Waymo works in like two places in the world. That's cool. But that's not how any of this stuff is going to work for mainstream, right? Because if I'm driving across Kansas, or if I'm in a vehicle that's driving itself across Kansas, or, you know, through the mountains of Appalachia, I need to know that this stuff is going to work.
You also don't want a car that can see everything around it. You want a car that can talk to everything around it and that can talk back to it.
That's the only way that this stuff works at scale, is if the cars are talking to each other and communicating and are plugged into smart cities and understand what the traffic light sequences are and stuff like that. It's the only way this works. The only way that stuff works is if we've got communications infrastructure to make it happen. 5G is the first step towards that. That's evolving. It's a process. There's an organization called 3GPP that sets out the standards that the telecommunication industry employs. Every few months, they come out with a new revision of that standard. The latest release that's been locked down and is now in the world is R17, R18, R19 are coming up behind that. And each of them exposes new frameworks, new architectures that software and hardware manufacturers then have to employ and get out in the world with chipsets and technology that actually uses this stuff, and software developers need to write apps that make it work. It's a process, but you know, it's infrastructure. It is a long-term play.
Well, what I would like to do is someday have you back on and we could have this discussion again, but you pretend I'm five, because there was a lot there that I feel like I didn't quite grok as fully as I would like to. Will you do that sometime? Will you come back?
Of course I will.
Excellent. Hey, if you have a question or a comment that you would like to share with us, we would certainly love to hear it. Our email address is observations@macobserver.com. Or if you're like me, you pronounce all the letters, observations@macobserver.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter. It is @TMODaily or twitter.com/TMODaily. If you want to follow me online, I am @MacOSKen on Twitter. You can also visit my website, macosken.com. Peter, if people want to keep up with you, I know you said it earlier, but if you would remind them, what's the best way? Where do they go? What do they do?
Yeah, rcrwireless.com is the website. You'll find my stuff there every day. My Twitter handle for RCR 5G related stuff is Peter Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, RCR. And if you're interested in sarcasm, my personal account is Flarg, F-L-A-R-G-H.
Advertising handle by Backbeat Media, online at backbeatmedia.com. The Daily Observations is a production of the Mac Observer. From the latest news to product reviews, your source for Apple News is macobserver.com.